This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Pedlin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's April 18th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. If you're listening to this pod on a podcast, you can also send me an email to bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com, or you can visit and comment on Bicycle Talk on Facebook. Many, many ways to reach me. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org or on iTunes. Beginning with Ron's rant of the week, it's getting to be that time of year where people are starting to populate the bicycle shops, and so things are getting very busy there, even though we're freezing to death up here in the Northeast because spring has forgotten to arrive, but, you know, we'll get to that in a little while. So my rant of the week is bicycle shop trolls. Yeah, trolls. We know what trolls are on the internet. We know how they, you know, they complain about this, they complain about that. They're always giving you the counterpoint. Well, my definition here of bicycle shop troll, and the folks that own bicycle shops are going to love this one. People who constantly complain about bicycle shops and their prices and refuse to accept that these are professionals and that won't be there if they're not supported. Okay, I have a great article which we're going to bring up a little bit later in the show. It was at Bicycle Retail and Industry News magazine, trade magazine known as Brain, and it'll be discussed further into the show. So we'll get back to that. Hold that thought, and I will return. There's also an additional discussion area on Facebook, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. On a positive side, I'm trying really hard to stay positive here. There was a hint of spring last weekend. Do you remember that, Fran? Do you remember that hint? Do you remember hearing that, seeing that, feeling that?
I do. I had a beautiful ride. I really had a wonderful ride. Big shout out to my buddy who I love to call Jim, well, to my Althea, but his name is Martin. And we did a wonderful ride, wonderful Thread City Cyclers ride. We went out to North Society Road, and it was one of those days where during the ride, it wound up that I overdressed. I was wearing a thin base layer and a thin long sleeve shirt, and I got warmer and warmer, and I was actually overdressed by the end of the ride, which is I'm okay with. And then when I got home, I sat on the porch with my friend Martin, and we sunned ourselves because we could.
Yeah.
And I was wearing a tank top and shorts, and then at about 3 o'clock, the temp started dropping.
Yeah.
And by, you know, 5, 6 o'clock.
Oh, I know. It was very short-lived. And for those of you who listen to us and you're a long way from here and maybe in a much warmer climate, well, great for you. That's wonderful. But, yeah, we have to deal with this winter thing. Now, the positive part of it is that once winter goes away, we have just unbelievably gorgeous weather up here, and we also have beautiful roads to ride on, and it gets very lush and very green and very pretty, and, you know, I can't wait. This has been a long spring. So on a positive side, great little hint of spring last weekend, a possible hint of spring again next week. Yes, that's right. It went away, and now it's cold and rainy, and I had to scrape my windshield this morning because it was covered in ice. So, you know, it's...
Did you really?
I did. It was all icy this morning everywhere.
I wonder why mine wouldn't have been. Probably because I came home late last night.
Or you got up later.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah.
Early this morning.
See, I'm off and running to the community center to teach an indoor cycling class at 5:45 in the morning. So it was still chilly then. So anyway, but... Back on the positive side, great ride last weekend with a great local bike club called the Thread City Cyclers. We had a really good time. I led a B-oriented ride and had about 11 people show up on the ride, and we all had a great time. It was good. It was good. But there's something that happened over the winter, Fran.
What's that?
The hills got bigger.
They did, didn't
they? They did. I know it's those frost heaves. I know it's those darn frost heaves.
I think it's the frost
heaves. I know they do it.
I'm going to go out today and try beat some of them down.
Okay. I think the more you ride over them, the more they level out.
I think so.
Yeah, it's
And I'm going to do my part to help to level them out.
It's a gravity thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's
And a weight thing. And because I've got my extra winter weight, so that's going to help.
Oh, stop. You do not. You do not.
Do.
No. You know, she's very... very sensitive about this. But.
Well, maybe some of it was the great resistance training. No, it's the resistance training doesn't make an excuse for the little menopause tan I got going on in the belly area.
Well, you know, whatever. We're going to move on. We're on the positive side here, right? Positive side. So moving from there, we're going to go to the maintenance minute. And so what I wanted to talk about a little bit on the maintenance minute today was to consider if you are the type of person who is more apt to take care of your own bicycle and you want to you want to do it that way, that, you know, the local bike shop is great. But, you know, I understand in the summertime when it gets really busy and they're a week and a half or sometimes 3 weeks out, it's kind of nice to have some basic maintenance knowledge so you can keep yourself on the road. My personal feeling about that is you should always have a backup bike, and then you can just drop off one bike while you ride the other bike.
Because the number of bikes you should own is N plus one.
That's right. Exactly. But if you have a backup bike, then you can leave your bike off and you can let them work on it at their leisure, which is not very leisurely because they're booked solid.
And if you have a partner that doesn't want you to have N plus one, then the number of partners you should have is N minus one.
Minus one, right. Oh, I like that. That's good. That's really good. Oh, boy.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Yeah, I see that. I see that. That's why you and I are like more than just radio partners.
So you kind of like me, huh?
Yeah, you're all right. We'll keep you around.
All right.
Yeah, that. So if you are the person that likes to do your own maintenance, maybe you have some skills and you are pretty comfortable around mechanical things, you should consider adding some professional tools to your toolbox. And you don't have to get a lot of professional tools. You can get things like pedal wrenches and chain tools and spoke wrenches. And I put a little note here on my pad of careful here, because some of these tools, if you're not familiar with them, spoke wrenches, they're one of my favorites. You can really cause a lot more damage than you can do helping your bike if you use that wrench the wrong way. So be sure you know what you are doing if you're getting these professional tools. And then the other thing I have on my list here is what they call a chain watcher, which is a device that you use to determine your chain wear. So you can replace your chain before it gets so worn that it starts doing damage to the rest of your bike. And that's a less expensive way of keeping your drivetrain alive on your bike, should you be using a multi-speed drivetrain. If you're using a single-speed drivetrain, we got to throw this all out the window because you won't need that many tools and you won't really need to worry as much about your chain wear. But it's a different story. Now, you can find many of these basic tools at your LBS. So go by to your local bike shop and stop and chat with them about what you can use and see if you really know how to use them. And they can recommend to you, you know, you should probably go here. You might not want to go there. I remember when I had my bike shop, I had tools out. I had a whole section of a board on the side of the wall that just had tools for sale, for purchase. And I had spoke wrenches there because I had people that would ask about spoke wrenches occasionally because they wanted to true their wheels or do a little bit of maintenance on their wheels. And I would, they'd come up to the countertop and they put the spoke wrench down on the counter. And I'd look at them and go, congratulations, you just bought the most dangerous tool I sell. And they look at me, they're really like kind of scared, intimidated. Like I said, no, it's okay. I said, do you know how to use this? And they go, well, I think so. Well, thinking so, not good. Knowing so, much better. Because once again, if you turn that wrench the wrong direction, you're going to make a big mess out of the wheel, which is already probably a little out because that's why you're using the tool. So be sure you know how to do that. And then check with your LBS also about local repair classes, because a lot of bike shops now offer repair classes. Now, this may not be the best time of year for that. They probably were more likely to have those classes over the wintertime when they're not as busy, but they may still have something going on. I know a few stores that I deal with that are still running maintenance classes in the springtime, and they can teach you these things. They can teach you how you can work on your own bike. You also may find, as one friend I talked to who went to a bicycle repair class, he knew the basics. He was pretty good at some basic stuff. You know, he could change a flat tire. He could change a cable. He could do a few things. But then he went to what they called a more advanced class. And when he went there, he got done with the class. He learned a lot from the class. But the main thing that he learned is that when he gets to that level of mechanical challenge, he's bringing it back to the bike shop. So it actually taught him to not try to do things himself. So always know your limitations, but take a look at some of the professional tools you can add to your toolbox, because it's kind of cool. And there's a lot of great stuff out there, and your local bike shop will probably have those tools for you to purchase. So you can check that out. Always rely on your local bike shop. We love the local bike shops. Try to push them. We try to promote them. Without them, where are we? And I'll have more discussion on that later on in the show. Last weekend was the Amstel Gold Classic Race, and there's it's one of the many classics, the spring classics over in Europe. If you're into bicycle racing and love bicycle racing, you'll find that there's some just really exciting one-day classics right now. The week before, I had spoken about the Paris-Roubaix, which is one of the more famous ones. A lot of people don't know as much about Amstel Gold, but all the big names were there, including Peter Sagan, and Alejandro Valverde was also there. So there were some big guys there, and Michael Valgren from the Netherlands was able to sneak away and make it happen and out sprint at the end. So anyway, it's kind of a cool thing. the comments go along with this with, I give it 4 out of 5 beers because it's Amstel Gold, you know, it's a beer thing. Always delivers a frantic and sketchy battle, and it's fun to watch these guys zip around on the narrow winding roads. The new finale has produced a much more dynamic and tactical race as opposed to one that's just a sprint up. So anyway, There's everyone has their opinions about the courses and how it is, but this race is nuts because it goes through some it's another comment here, just as nerve-wracking as ever, and not necessarily because of the racing action, but because of the constant slicing and dicing, shaking and baking, gripping and ripping, turning and burning, as Alex Howes put it after the race. The plethora of road furniture, parked cars, transitions from big roads to skinny roads must make for a mentally taxing day, especially after almost 7 hours of racing. So anyway, that's Amstel Gold. We love the classics in the spring, or some of us love the classics in the spring. For those of you who are out there who love bicycle racing as much as I do, then you know what I'm talking about. For those who aren't as crazy about it as I am, we're going to move on to the next subject. So we are rapidly approaching National Bike Month, okay? National Bike Month also has National Bike to Work Day involved with it. And National Bike Month is a promotion through the League of American Bicyclists to get you out on your bike and consider your bicycle as an alternative form of transportation. Maybe not an alternative, maybe the form of transportation, depending on how you look at this. So that's entirely up to you. There are some great articles that are on the League of American Bicycles, and that would be bikeleagueoneword.org is where you go, and you can go to the League of American Bicyclists, and you can see different things. One that I found, though, which I thought was kind of cool, actually I found a couple of them here. First of all, if you're a business and you're thinking of getting ready for National Bike to Work Month, and maybe considering this as a permanent fixture of your business. Maybe it's something you want to continue to support because you realize that when your employees ride into the to work in the morning, that they're actually fresher and they're more alert and they're more productive and they're happier. Now, who would not want to have an employee that is in that particular condition versus the one who sat in commuter traffic all day long or morning long in a car, getting frustrated, getting cut off, maybe had a fender bender, maybe had to deal with, you know, people screaming at them and horns blowing and all that, when you could just ride your bike in? It's just, think about this. What a great idea. And what a great way to promote to your employees of your business, should you own a business, of a great way to change their attitude when they walk through the door in the morning. The one thing I will tell you, they will be more awake when they come in after riding a bicycle in. It does make a difference. Even the folks that I teach at the morning cycling class at the community center go to work much more refreshed and much more awake. I do have a couple of them that complain about the 3 o'clock nap, but that's because sometimes I work them a little harder than they were expecting. So National Bike Month is coming up in May, and there are 10 ways here at the League of American Bicyclists, once again, that they have 10 ways to get your business ready for National Bike Month. So if you're looking at doing this, there's 10 ideas that you can do for your workplace. Number one on the list is order Smart Cycling Quick Guides and ABC Quick Check bookmarks, and those are both on the League of American Bicyclists website. And you can share that with your employees, your customers, and guests. And by the way, you should probably get this done fairly quickly because I think they recommend having it ordered and placing your order by April 23rd to get your materials by May 1st. And if you, so the sooner the better is what you want to do. So you, if you're really seriously thinking about this, or if you're an employee that's listening to this and you want to point this out to your employer and maybe your other work coworkers, this is the time to take action on this because it's kind of a cool thing to do. Get people excited about riding their bikes to work. It's cool. And number two, set up a workplace or a team on the 2018 National Bike Challenge. Once again, if you go to the league, you will find the 2018 National Bike Challenge. There are links there for it. I will try to remember to place this also on Facebook. I know our friend Dave Wahlberger has done that. He's got a link out there for our club as far as the National Bike Challenge goes. And they have all these little cool little pins that you can get. You can, show off that you rode your bike in because you're wearing the little pin. That's cool. Number four on the list is queue up your company's social media account for hashtag Bike Month and with the league's free Bike Month promo materials, smart cycling videos, and Bike Month bingo. Number five, ask your local bike league instructor to host a lunch and learn at your business on the basics of bicycle commuting and bicycle safety to lead a lunchtime ride with safety tips for your employees. Number six, contact a local bike shop in your area to bring a mechanic in to offer basic tune-up tips or maintenance advice for your employees before bike to work day. And if you're already, number seven, if you're already a bicycle-friendly business, you can order some swag to show off your award status. If you're not currently a bike-friendly business, you can apply for the program through, once again, the League of American Bicyclists. Big shout-out to those guys today. If number eight here is plan a bike-to-work day event, like sponsoring a local bike-to-work commuter pit stop for the whole community or organizing a bike-to-work day breakfast for your employees. I know that Bike Mansfield is doing that here in town. They do that every year. They have a little stop in down in the town square here, and people who ride their bikes in can stop, and they can get a little something to eat with some nicely donated materials. So that's kind of a cool thing. Number nine, support bicycle advocacy by becoming a business member of the league and your local and statewide advocacy groups. And number 10, organize a workplace biker gang and staff lunch ride. So these are the cool things you can do if you want to be getting yourselves ready, your business ready for National Bike Month, and highly recommended here. Now, we're moving same site. We're still working with the League of American Bicyclists. There's just a plethora of information here. They've really got some great stuff. And they have a link here, which is a tip sheet to learn the ins and outs of commuting by bicycle. Why do you want to commute by bike? Number one here on the list, fight pollution. Very, very smart. Makes sense, right? We don't pollute as much as cyclists, as motorized vehicles do, internal combustion engines. It's so you can stay fit, you can avoid traffic delays, you can save money, and you can enjoy your commute instead of having that road rage commute that you would have if you're sitting in a parking lot on a highway somewhere and watching the bicyclists go by you as you're sitting there still. How to commute by bike. You want to share the road. Sharing the road, it's a gray figure. There's some new terminology out on this as far as sharing the road goes. We can maybe have that discussion on another episode because there's some controversy to all these share the road signs that are out there. How to commute by bike, signals and signs, the things you need to do. If you once again go to this link on League of American Bicyclists, you can click on these and it'll show you all the different signals and signs that you can do to let people know that what your intentions are while you're riding your bike. There's a safety link, there's a route choice, bike parking, clothing, showering, the bike itself, maintenance, and of course, weather, which you can run into. Commuter gear basics, picking the right bicycle, your carrying capacity, whether you want to put fenders or lights or safety equipment on your bike, what tools you want to carry with you, a lock, flat preventions, visibility. There's tons of information here. So I highly encourage you to look into this because the more prepared you are when you get out there, the better off you will be when you're going to ride your bicycle into work. You want to also be looking at things in bicycle security like visibility, securing your bike, proper bicycle locks, carrying a lock, and then there's some extra comments on there too. Carrying cargo, a rear rack, a front rack, baskets, packing panniers, and rain gear. These are all things to consider. And if you're rain riding, you need to look into protecting yourself, protecting your bike, being careful when you're cornering and braking, and some of the other hazards that can exist while riding in the rain. One of my big ones that I like to point out to people when they're riding in the rain, if you're riding in the rain and you see a big puddle ahead, do your best that you can to avoid it. Don't swerve around it. Make a very defined movement going around the puddle. But what you have to be careful with puddles, especially this time of year, if you live where we live up here in the Northeast, where the roads have been decimated over the wintertime by plows and other various things, there may be a deep hole in the middle of that puddle. So you want to try to avoid the puddle because you may be riding yourself into a pothole and the results can be not so good because you can end up planting your front wheel in so deeply and so harshly that it may flip you off your bike. So big puddles, beware. Just be careful. Even the little puddles, you don't know what's underneath that puddle and why that puddle has been created. So you want to keep your eyes open on that too. These are things just to keep yourself happy and safe while you're commuting on your bike to work week and or month or whatever you decide to do. Maybe you're going to do this forever now. You go, you know what? I gave it a try. I gave up my car for a couple of days because I thought it would be a good idea. And then I just got hooked. It happens. It does happen. It's a good thing. You'll just be so much happier if you can ride your bike in, ride your bike home, if you have the ability, if you live too far away. I know all the excuses. I've heard them all. If you live too far away for your range as far as commuting in by bicycle, you can do what some people I know have done. I know our listener Mike out in Eastford, he would drive in part way and park his car in a commuter lot and then ride the rest of the way. The idea being when you get to the point where you're going to start sitting in a parking lot in your car on a major highway, maybe it's time to get off the highway and then ride your bike in from there And it just makes it a lot more enjoyable. It takes the stress out of your drive. It just really changes your attitude. And it's good for you. So that's a good thing. So these are things you want to look at. So there's a couple of other things that have come up in the news. And I have found that I've received different opinions about certain things. There's this thing called the Idaho Stop, which we have discussed on the show before. And as I was looking into this a little bit deeper, I found a point and counterpoint on this. So I thought I would go through this today. This was on Bicycle Retailer, which is an industry magazine that I subscribe to. And so the opinion here was on the Idaho Stop. And should cyclists be allowed to yield at stop signs? So a refresher on the Idaho Stop. In the state of Idaho, which has been going on for 35 years, people riding bikes in Idaho have been allowed to do something they can't legally do just about anywhere else. They can treat stop signs as yields. After determining it's safe to do so, bicycles in Boise can coast through stops without losing momentum or their balance. Until June of 2017, Idaho was the sole state that permitted this behavior. It's been joined by Delaware through a bill passed in June, not yet signed by the governor. Is California next to change the law? They're working on it. An unusual bipartisan bill, AB 1103, would permit the Idaho Stop in the Golden State. Idaho and Delaware are fine states, but California is the nation's most populous and arguably most influential state. A change in California would create a powerful precedent for reform across the country. So other states have tried but failed to enact similar legislation. Oregon, Arizona, Colorado, Minnesota, Arkansas, Utah, Oklahoma, and Montana all have made attempts. Oh, good luck in Montana. Shout out to my friends in Montana. I know what you're dealing with. That's an indication that rolling through stops is not confined to Idaho, Delaware, and California. It's also not a rare behavior. A DePaul University study done in Chicago found that 96% of bike riders didn't come to a stop. 96% is a pretty high number. I would probably put motorized vehicles fairly high up there, too, from what I have seen. Millions of times a day across the U.S., riders treat stop signs as yields without a catastrophic result. In Idaho, injury collisions actually decreased after it changed the law and have remained at low levels ever since. So anyway, there's people that are not feeling like this is such a good idea that it tends to promote other problems out there. But if you ride a bike and you are understanding of the fact that every time you have to start from a dead stop and go again, that it requires a lot more effort and it becomes more tiring. And boy, if you could just roll through that stop sign, it sure would be a whole lot easier. Then you understand. If you're a motorist and you're driving a motorized vehicle and you're upset because you see a cyclist rolling through an intersection when they should truly be stopping and obeying the law, which is true in many states, then I can see that side of it too. Yielding is far different than blowing through a stop sign, though. Yield signs are used around the world and are well understood. Motorists make subjective judgments every day whether it's safe to pass on a two-lane highway, if there's enough time to turn left in front of an oncoming vehicle, or what is a safe speed in bad weather. So if we have more bikers, fewer vehicles, it would make pedestrians safer, not less safe. And maybe more bike riders would stay off of the sidewalks and out of the pedestrian realm if they felt the streets were more welcoming. So there's a lot to be discussed here. And I know that the California Bicycle Coalition is fully supporting this bill. And the executive director, Dave Snyder, said it makes sense to let the traffic flow, make bike riding safer and easier, and lift the cloud of illegality from something that virtually everyone does without a problem. So anyway, It's an interesting discussion, and I thought I would bring it up because it did come out in the in on an opinion page on Bicycle Retailer in Bicycle Retailer magazine. So of course you have a point. You have to have a counterpoint. So there was a counterpoint that came back from a person by the name of Ray Keener, and he's a longtime contributor to Brain and does a lot of other things in the bike industry. The thoughts expressed here are Keener's personal opinions and not those of any organization that he represents. So he had read the opinion piece in favor of the Idaho stop in Brain's magazine. And he said he makes an excellent case for why this change in the law would be favorable for cyclists individually. But he has some things he'd like to say about it. And he'd like to change the conversation that he considers to be more important than the convenience or prevention of momentum of any one cyclist. That is how cyclists are perceived in our culture. And he makes a good point here, because I had mentioned this earlier. It's, you know, you see a cyclist rolling through a stop sign, and yes, they may have plenty of room. Yes, it may have been completely legal, but it does tend to sometimes infuriate the driver of a motorized vehicle. And so this is something that he touches on, and that's when he talks about how cyclists are perceived in our culture. And he says, I've always said with some sadness that Americans love bicycles. They're just not so crazy about cyclists. I love that statement. That is just a great statement. I believe that collectively, we as cyclists can't encourage a change in the law that further erodes the general perception of our ilk. So, you know, he makes a point. Once again, he lives in Boulder, Colorado, a place where cyclists are seen in a very positive light, where cycling participation is more than double the national average. Drivers are generally considerate, and the city spends a lot of money on great facilities. On the other side of the coin, nothing we do or say as a group or individually is going to change our minds of the talk show radio hosts, hey, that's me, and other yahoos who trade off of calling us names, rolling their coal, and threatening to run us off the road. So, anyway, let's look at a standard triage process where we assume the lovers and haters are reliably stuck in their positions. So we turn our thoughts to the vast middle, people who have mixed feelings about cyclists. They actually have a lot in common with the ambivalence of interested but concerned cyclists we need to hear. We hear so much about. Yeah, we see how cyclists reduce traffic congestion, carbon emissions, but do they have to be so self-righteous about it and to be so reckless and unlawful? And so, anyway, this guy says he's not going to get in a long-standing debate about whether drivers or cyclists violate traffic laws more often. This is about perception, not statistics. Bottom line, when we break the law, it's usually glaring. Running stop signs, riding the wrong way on a one-way street, whatever. You know, those are things that we're not talking about that here, though. We're talking about the Idaho stop. It's really not an unsafe practice if you are using your head. And you're not riding up a one-way street. That's crazy to ride up one-way streets. I even know of a place locally that there's a bike lane that sends you up a one-way street to stay on the bike lane. So I can't even get started on that right now. That's another rant for another time. The thing is here, it's a perception problem, and we need to be really, really careful about, if you're a cyclist, you need to be very careful about how you approach certain areas, intersections, whatever. And no, you do not need to be blowing through stoplights and stop signs. You need to be very aware of them. But if you have a situation where there is no one coming and it is completely safe for you to make that right-hand turn, then the Idaho stop just makes a lot of sense. And again, once this gets legs in California, or what we should say is wheels on the ground in California, then I think that there will be a lot more states that are following through with this. I know I've made a suggestion to our local group here, as to maybe we should look into getting this enacted within our laws here in the state of Connecticut, because it's a pretty good idea. It's also an advantage for you as a cyclist to be able to, you know, keep your wheels rolling and keep the momentum going forward. It'll save you a little bit of time in your bicycle commute. So it's kind of a neat thing. So I'm going to go back now, and I am going to go to something that I had brought up earlier in a rant, and the rant was back with the local bike shop issue and people and bicycle trolls and people who are not supporting their local bicycle shops, and how it's a tough situation, but it is a situation. So Bicycle Retailer again had some great information, and I thought I would bring this out. And this is about an anonymous mechanic asks who got the cost of living raise this year. So I bring this up because, again, we talk a lot about people who are unwilling to support their local bicycle shops, and they feel that, you know, it might be too expensive for them to go there, and they don't understand what goes into becoming a professional bicycle mechanic. There's similar training that goes into becoming a professional automobile mechanic. There's a lot of things you need to learn. And, you know, you think about it, you go, well, it's just a bicycle. I mean, how much do you need to really learn? And guess what? A lot. There's a whole lot that goes on with a bicycle. There's a lot of things that people don't take into account when they're looking at the simplicity of the machine. There's a lot of things you can uncover when you're working on a bike, and the professional mechanic has seen it all. They've seen a number of different instances. Little things like, you know, if you're replacing the cables on a bike, and let's say it's a multi-speed bike and it's derailleur cables, which I highly encourage you to replace every year, maybe more, maybe less, depending on how much you're riding the bike. If you're not riding your bike a lot, it's not as necessary. But if you're an avid user, I'm in the process right now of breaking Fran's bike down and replacing her cables, especially her derailleur cables, because they get worn and they get sticky. The housings wear in the inside. Things happen, and they need to be taken care of. So and that way you can ensure your really nice smooth shifting. So one of the things that my local bicycle shop said as I went to grab some cables that I was going to put into Fran's bike, and they were Shimano cables for a Shimano system, and it's an 11-speed shifting system. And he said, you do have Shimano housing, right? And I said, yes, I do. I have, you know, I had bought a large roll of it a number of years ago. So I do have a Shimano housing. He said, don't use any other housing with the Shimano cables. He said he has experience with the fact that it's not good to combine different things. So if you're going to using a Shimano system, you might want to consider Shimano cables and Shimano housings, and you'll get a much smoother flow and you'll get a better job out of it. So these are things you need to know, and a professional bicycle mechanic will know that. There's actually a website, and it's called it's the Professional Bicycle Mechanics Association, and you can find that at PROBMA.org, and you can go there and you'll find that they have newsletters that they put out, and they put out different blogs that are talking about different things, mechanical tips and that sort of thing, so you can check and see. So this anonymous mechanic, the reason I'm bringing this up is because, you know, I really feel that there's a big problem in the industry and the perception of those who support our industry. First of all, if you do support our industry, a major shout out to you. We love you. We think it's great that you're doing this. We really appreciate the fact that you appreciate us in the industry. But unfortunately, I think that many of the bicycle mechanics that are out there, and people within the industry are not paid as well as they should be.
This article made me want to close my doors.
I know. Isn't it crazy?
I looked at this article and I went, this is the kind of stuff that keeps me up at night. It makes me not want to run a business. And you have people who are like, you know, people who are working for you go, where's my money?
Yeah.
And you want to look at them and go, where's my money?
Yeah, right.
You know?
I know.
I mean, this is a person. Now, this person has an understanding of what it's like to run a bicycle shop. And he said some of the reasons why maybe he didn't get a raise. But he didn't care. He didn't go look for a better job. Good luck, buddy, because all the bike shops are having this issue. I mean, unless you're a crack business owner, which, you know, how many bicycle shop owners do you know who are fabulous business people? This is the industry.
I know. It is the industry. And you know, and there's a situation here in the bicycle industry, too. The people that are in the bicycle industry are there because they love it.
Yeah.
And you know, is that a smart business model? No, not at all. It is not a smart business model to go into something because you love it. You want to go in there because if you're a business person, you want to make money. That is the general idea behind it. But at the same time, different businesses have different returns of what you're going to get from it.
Don't even get me started.
And, you know, Fran and I are both small business owners, so we could go on about this on an entire show. But I just wanted to bring this up because, you know, this is a good point. When I had my bike shop, I would be in there and I would be, I would have someone coming in and they'd have their bicycle worked on. And I would hand them the bill, and they had a pretty good idea of what it was going to be at the end. I was pretty good about keeping my estimates close. And then they'd question me on the cost of something. And they'd say, well, what is this right here? And, well, you know, it took me an extra 20 minutes to get this done. We had a problematic situation where, you know, there was a bolt that was stuck, and we had to drill it out and easy out it, and we had to go through a little bit more than what we normally would, and it probably could have been prevented, my favorite word, if maybe, you know, the bike had come in for a little more regular maintenance. And so, you know, and you hear this, I mean, you hear this from your car mechanics all the time. They're always talking about this. And then what do you end up doing? You end up paying them because, you know, you need your car, right? Well, you need your bike too. And so I had a person, he questioned it, and I said, you know, this is why, and this is what happened. And he was pretty good with it, but he wasn't like super happy when he left the shop. And I watched him go out and get into his brand new vehicle. And I knew that he was in a job that he got a 3% raise every year. And I'm not getting 3% raises every year. And I'm thinking, you know, why is it okay for you but not okay for me? And so that's why there's this, you know, this section here about this person kind of rants a bit about the fact that, so who got my cost of living wage increase this year? Was it the landlord that raised the shop rent by more than the rate of inflation? Was it the VIP who got discounts on a high ticket item and made fun of his friends for paying full retail price? You know who you are. Was it customers who were rewarded with free installation when purchasing a pair of tires at MSRP and then the profit made on the tires was less than the cost of the labor given away? Was it the customer who bought a defective bike computer with a 25% margin at 15% off and then required 6 hours of troubleshooting before the supplier would issue a return authorization? Was it the industry employee who sold current model EP bike employee purchase bike at below retailer cost to a customer who had previously purchased 5 bikes over the last 10 years at full price in the same shop? Was it the hidden cost of implementing the new point of sale system? Was it the manufacturer's new direct consumer closeout site that rendered a big chunk of inventory unsellable? Was it the customer who repeatedly called for technical assistance and estimates when they bought the group set online. Now, you know, this guy, I mean, he hit them all. He swung for the bleachers and he hit them all.
He's criticizing his boss. He's saying, hey, boss, you have some bad business practices. And because you have bad business practices, bye-bye.
Right. So this is why I wanted to bring this up, because you're right. He is. He's saying this from a mechanic standpoint because he's feeling like he's not getting his fair share. And he doesn't understand that when you own a business, there are a lot of costs that come at you all the time. And it's hard. And I, you know.
Also, how you pay your staff more than you pay yourself.
And then there's that. And most of my shop owners have a way higher payroll than they do for what they're bringing in.
Uh-huh.
And their managers, as I have spoken to a number of these folks that own bike shops, make more money than they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
no comment.
Once again, it's a love of the sport and a love of what you're doing. And yeah, so you own your own business. That's great. That's wonderful. And at the end, you might be able to sell off all your product that's in your store for, 50 to 75% off of its real value.
And then find another job.
So at the very end here, he does say most mechanics truly want their employers' businesses to thrive. We show a lot of solidarity and respect for the struggles of small business owners who employ us, and we make a lot of sacrifices in order to be able to work in this industry.
I know, we don't,
Being fair and organized, showing us the recognition of our labor and our sacrifices, and treating us as partners in the creation of our working conditions is the least our employers can do in return. So I couldn't let it rest. I had to go to the next one. And the next one is, the opinion here is, it's the end of the road for the IBD. That's Independent Bicycle Dealer. Say hello to the IBS. Okay. And so this is written by a gentleman by the name of Dan Sotelo, who is the founder. He was the founder of Anza, if anybody can remember back in the days of Anza, the parts and accessories brand from the 90s. He's the inventor of the mountain bike bar end and worked with several bike brands, including Shimano, Specialized, Maxxis, and Panaracer. For 10 years, he operated a bike shop on Mercer Island near Seattle called Bike Lair. So anyway, he talks a little bit more about how you have to change the idea of being an independent bicycle dealer and welcome the idea of independent bicycle service. Okay. Now I hear this a lot and I have also preached it a lot. If you're not paying attention to your service in your bike shop right now, you're not going to be around in the next 5 or 6 years. Service is really what it's all about. There's a lot of product out there that is not going to be purchased at your store, and you are going to have to figure out how you're going to deal with that. And dealing with that is to stop resisting and alienating online consumers and just face the fact that the internet is here to stay. Like it or not, big bicycle brands sooner or later are going to cave into internet sales in order to survive, thus leaving stubborn IBDs high and dry. So if you're looking at making all of your money by selling bicycles, you gotta really, this is where I often will talk about, what's the difference between a bicycle shop and a bicycle store? And I think I've asked you this question, Fran, and I think you know the answer on this. But I'll run the explanation to you right now to let you know. A bicycle store is a place that you go to buy bicycles and buy all the neat little things that go all over it, and the nice accessories, and it's generally a very pretty atmosphere, and it's really kept clean, and it's a very nice retail environment, and it's a bicycle store. And hidden somewhere in the back of that bicycle store or in the basement of that bicycle store, there may be a place that actually does work on your bicycles, okay? But their sole purpose is retail. They want to sell you products off the shelf that you may have already done your research on, that you just go over, you pick it up, you go over to the counter, you put it down in front of them, and you pay for your product, and out the door you go. A bicycle shop is an entirely different beast. And a bicycle shop is the place where when you walk through the door, it may be not, maybe it's not quite as neat and orderly as maybe some of the bicycle stores that you've been in.
That place in Rochester, Vermont.
Maybe
that was a bicycle shop. Oh, my goodness.
I used to own a bicycle shop also. I kept it as neat and orderly as I could, but we were a bicycle shop, and there's many reasons why. But anyway, a bicycle shop is the place that when you walk in the door, you're probably going to get a clean view of the repair area when you walk through the
right.
door. Okay. It's going to be in your face. You're going to realize that when you walk through that door, that they don't just sell bicycles here. They actually work on bicycles
here. Bicycles International, Venice, Florida.
And the bicycle shop area may be neat and clean if they're really good about it. And it may not be neat and clean, but you know what? They're fixing bicycles. You'll find that those bicycle shops are tremendously littered with used bicycles that are in for repair and tags all over them. And it may not be as orderly as you would like to see it. Some shops are really, really good about it, and they do a great job. And they're able to be a bicycle store and a bicycle shop at the same time, and they're a tip of the cycling cap to them for being able to pull that off. But it's not as easy as it looks. So the bicycle store will definitely have more of a service and labor-oriented idea is what they're doing. So some of the things that you want to take a look at is you want to take a look at how you present yourself. You really, you know, put yourself in a customer's shoes and try to think how what they would like from their local bicycle shop. And some of the stars that come up here is, I wish I had professional mechanics because I've taken my bike back to the same problem six times and it just gets worse. Heard that. I wish I could go to my shop without guilt being made to feel so guilty for them to install my new components or build the new bike I bought online. I wish the shop would help guide me choosing the best bike and components online. I wish I didn't have to drive dozens of miles from my local bike shop to a shop that's more online friendly and welcoming. I wish I wasn't blamed from my local bike shop when I was asked to have my online bike assembled there. For your information, this happens a lot. So that's the first thing you do, put yourself in your customer's position. And you know what? I'm going to come back to this next week because we're running out of time. Oddly enough, we talked our way through another perfectly good show. And we're going to talk next week about how to change and transform your bicycle store into more of a bicycle shop and more of a service-oriented business to be able to stay alive in the next decade or two. So from here, I'm going to go to a few things that are on my list here for upcoming events. The New England Bike Walk Summit is April 26th through the 27th in Boston, Massachusetts. The annual Farm to Fork Fondos that are now 8 deep, and that's really like a big deal. I was just talking with them the other day. And they're great rides. I love to promote them because your old pal Pedalin' Ron and his co-host Fran will be there to greet you. We're involved with that organization. It's kind of a cool thing. Beautiful bike rides, really well done events. And they have a website, www.farmforkfondo.com. You can check that out. National Bike to Work Week is May 18th, 14th through the 18th. My National Bike to Work Day is May 18th. Check out League of American Bicyclists for more information. You can ride around the Quabbin on Saturday, June 16th, 2018. Not much traffic, plenty of hills. It's not a race. The Seven Lakes Ride is going to be June 24th, 2018. 62, a 45, a 25, and a 20-mile ride beginning at Stafford High School in Stafford Springs, Connecticut. And July 28th, the Thread City Century, the Thread City Cyclist Century Ride at Edward Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. That's July 28th, 2018. We'll have more details in the future on all of those rides as we will have guests on the show to talk about it. My name is Pedalin' Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news and cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and would like to have comment, you can send me an email, to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.